This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
You know my temperature rising, the jukebox blowing a fuse. My heart beating rhythm and my soul keep a singing the blues. I roll over Beethoven, tell Tchaikovsky the news.
Well, Chuck Berry, nice.
I got the rockin' pneumonia.
I apologize, by the way. The Blues are playing Wednesday. David Backus, I think, is injured again and not playing, which would be a shame. I'd like to see him take a bow, get another ovation. All right, this is the Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you until 12 o'clock. Aunt Peg texting him. Frank, I'm sure the Blues will make a run to get into the postseason, so I spend hundreds of dollars on tickets, and then they lose in the first round. Let's see. Your number one is supposed to be a rock, a leader in the clubhouse. I see too much drama with Carlos. He has a million-dollar arm, but not a clue on how to maximize his potential. Yeah, I mean, he's got to make some growth in that regard. There's no doubt about it. Absolutely. He's got to get better there. All right. It is March Madness, and I got to tell you, when I think of March Madness, I think of some great NCAA tournament runs. And we have with us today a man who made some spectacular NCAA tournament runs. He went to two different Final Fours. He won the SEC Coach of the Year Award four times. He's in the College Basketball Hall of Fame, one of the great coaches of his generation. It's our pleasure to welcome Dale Brown. Coach, great to be with you. How are you?
Frank, I'm good. How long since we've talked? It seems like a century ago.
Well, we've had you on the radio maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, but
it seemed a lot longer.
I can remember a time. This is one of the best stories I have in television. I'm doing NBC television in Lexington. You have a game at Rupp Arena, and you didn't like the call, and the referees asked you to leave the court, and you were so gracious because I had to go on the air at 10 o'clock, and you actually did a 10 o'clock live shot with me while you were ejected from the game. I'll always remember that.
Oh, man alive. That Kentucky rivalry, when I came and saw that LSU had only beaten them once in history, and the first meeting I ever had with the team, Frank, I wrote on the board, who we're after, and I wrote Kentucky. And I know all the guys. In fact, many of my players now tell me, in fact, I went to dinner with one of them the other night, we thought you were nuts when you put that on the board. Kentucky needs to be our goal. And it wasn't easy, but they were kind of the beacon light for basketball. They had won more championships, Frank, than all the other SEC schools combined. And through a lot of hard work and good kids, we wound up beating Kentucky more than any other school in the country, 18 times.
18-11 against Kentucky, I believe.
I don't remember this. I know we beat them 18, but we lost more than we won. Of course, first 5 years we struggled trying to get the program off the ground. But
how do you remember? And give us an idea of what it's like to make one of those runs and to really just elevate the whole community of Baton Rouge and to get to the Final Four. What was that like, Coach?
I think it's that's really a good question. It's got a lot of depth to it. There's a troika of feelings that come over you. One, you're grateful that you were able to lead a bunch of young men there. Two, now you think, I can use this to let people, the down and outers, say, you can't do it. It's impossible. That the impossible is what nobody can do until somebody does it. And then three, the series of seeing the joy of a group of guys that listened, believed they could listen, believed your philosophy, and it came true. And the 1986 team was probably the most spectacular, and I don't want to bore you with this, but everything that could possibly go wrong with that 86 team happened. We had the following situations happen. We lost our 7-foot center from Yugoslavia. 7-1, actually. Zoran Jovanović got in a car accident, hurt his knee, was out for the year. Our backup center, or he could have maybe been the starter, Tito Horford, 7-footer from Dominican Republic. He was suspended. Our third center, he became ineligible. We had no centers left. And I remember calling Ricky Blanton, and that name may ring a bell with you, a 6'6" kid from Miami. Great kid. Called him in the office and said, Ricky, we got nowhere to go, but we got to go with you at center. Coach, and his eyes got bigger. And so, Coach, I've never played center, but I've never played with my back to the basket. I really believe you can do it. That team was spectacular. First of all, we were the lowest seed ever to go to a Final Four at that time, 11. And they beat the number 1, 2, and 3 seeds to get to the Final Four. So a lot of people consider that Pollyanna, you know, telling kids they can do something when everybody says they can't, you know, it's impossible. But I think that's been a big difference in our country, Frank, over the years. This country used to always be able to accentuate the positive and diminish the negative. Now we reversed it. We accentuate the negative and diminish the positive. When you turn on television, it's hard not to get depressed, along with the regular news and the fake news, which Trump described, which I'm not a fan of either one of Trump or Hillary Clinton. I didn't vote for either one of them. I did vote, but not for either one of them. But I think we've got to get more positive vibes going in our country.
We're talking with the great Dale Brown, Hollywood Casino Press Box, on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusumano with you until 12 o'clock. You also, during that 86 run, came up with the phrase, the freak defense. Can you describe that for us?
Basically, it was this. I was a high school coach at a little Catholic high school in North Dakota. We went up to a town called Williston. I had a 6-foot center. They had a 6'9 center. They devoured us. His center at Williston happened to be a junior. His name, by the way, happened to be Phil Jackson, the Phil Jackson. So that summer, that time there weren't copy machines, I took a ditto machine. I ran out hundreds and hundreds of pages of quartz and thought, if I'm this little Catholic school I'm coaching in, I'm not going to be able to compete with my philosophy, full court press, man-to-man. I'm going to have to confuse people. Well, then I bought a book called The Art of War, written by a the whole history was a famous Chinese warrior, Sun Tzu. And in that book, the more I read it, I thought, darn, this is exactly what I want to do. It said, when you face a superior opponent, you must practice deception. You must have him prepare everywhere, and then he won't be prepared anywhere. So I thought, I've got to come up with a defense. So basically, without trying to make it very confusing, we called it the freak defense. We came down and lined up in a 1-2-2 zone. If the ball was passed into the right-hand side of the court, which normally that's the side that most entry passes are made because of right-hand point guards, we would then on the entry pass play man-to-man, that whole series down. If the ball was passed into the center of the court, we now played a 2-3 matchup zone. If the ball was passed into the left-hand wing, we played a 1-3-1 zone. Then we could flip those at a timeout. We could flip the clues, and it really did. It neutralized superior talent because they're coming down the court now. Well, last time I passed it in there, now they're trapping us. What are they doing now? So it sounds more complicated than it is, and it won a lot of ball games for us.
Wow, you'd have to have a pretty bright team to do that every time down on defense. You must have had a high basketball IQ.
Well, you certainly don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to do it, or a coach, because I wouldn't have coached if that had been the case, but you do have to have kids that think fast off their feet. Let me give you an example of that. We're playing North Carolina in the Meadowlands, and North Carolina had Sam Perkins, Michael Jordan,
James Worthy.
I can go down the line. Great team. We played the freak defense. Now, I knew Dean Smith was a highly organized type of guy, and that his teams were synchronized very well. So we had to throw them off. Now, Frank, I'm going to make you not a bet. If you can guess the score of halftime, I'll take you to every Ruth's Chris in any town we're ever in.
All right.
What do you think the score
was?
I'll
say 30-27. I'll go low.
21-9.
Oh, my gosh.
LSU leading. So it's certainly not. It wasn't the defenses themselves, obviously. The man-to-man, the traps, the 1-3-1, the 2-3, that's been going on for centuries. But to confuse those – to mix them up helped. And then whenever I crossed my arms and give a signal, that means we were going to go into some type of full court press or whatever. And it was very effective for us.
I want to talk about your relationship with Shaquille O'Neal. The SEC did a beautiful story, beautiful documentary on it. Describe that relationship and why the two of you clicked and have remained close.
I most certainly can. Years ago, during the communist period of time, the State Department got a hold of me and wanted me to speak. They were sending over 90,000 troops to mass them on the East German border to let the communists know, we're here to stay. You're not coming into this area. They wanted me to start in southern Utah, southern Germany, and work the way up to the final spot, a place called Wildflecken, a place historically when Europe was invaded. They came through there. We had a cracked armor division. I finished the lecture, packing my bag, anxious now to get home after being on the road for a week. I get a tap on my shoulder, and I turn around. Here's a giant of a guy, 6'9", about 250, I estimate. And he stuttered, Coach Brown. And then he explained, he said, I'm trying out for the team here. And he said, I run him down the court about 3 or 4 times, and my lower extremities tire. And then he said, I also can't dunk a ball, Coach Brown. He said, can you show me some exercises to improve my endurance and my vertical jump? I said, most certainly. I said, do you have a weight room in here? No, we don't. I said, well, let me show you some non-resistant exercises. So I maybe spent a maximum of 10 minutes showing him non-resistant. I went to get a pen and piece of paper, and I said, what do I do, soldier? As soon as I get back to LSU, I'll send you our weight training program. I said, how long you been in service? And he kind of looked around, and he bent over and cupped his hand over his mouth. And he said, Coach Brown, I'm not in service. I said, you're not? He said, I'm only 13 years old. And I looked at his shoe. What size shoe do you have, son? He said, 17. I said, what's your name? He said, my name is Shaquille O'Neal. I said, well, what are you doing here? My father's a career military man. Well, that's how we first became in touch. So I got home, sent him the weight training program. Within probably 6 to 8 weeks, I was heading over to the basketball arena for practice. My secretary came running after me. Oh, here's a letter from Shaquille. Opened it up on the way, Frank, and it said, Dear Coach Brown, I did everything you told me to do. And my high school coach cut me off the team. He told me I'm too slow, I'm too clumsy, I have too big a feet, I could never be a basketball player. I suggest you become a goalie in soccer. What should I do, Coach Brown? Man, I folded the letter up, Frank. I put it in my back pocket. Got back to the office. Everybody was gone. I sat behind my desk, and I'm pondering, now what kind of a profound statement am I going to give a 13-year-old child that just had his heart broken? And then it hit me. I'm going to tell him the same thing about my life. So I sat down, and I'm somewhat paraphrasing this. Dear Shaquille, I'm so sorry what happened to you. However, I found out in my life, whenever anybody said I couldn't do anything because I didn't have a father, my mother was on welfare, we were poor, I tried the following, and it always worked for me. I'll bet if you try it, it'll work for you. It's fairly simple. And this is true to all of us on this earth, all 8 billion of us. If you always sincerely try to do your very best, and only you will really know that, and if you never give up under any conditions, sooner or later, God will take care of you. Good luck, Coach Brown. Years go by. He's just told me within the past year a story I didn't know. He said he waited for my letter. You know, he was ready to give up. And his mother told him to go get the mail. And they had a mailbox, outside mailbox, about half a mile from his house. And it was in the winter. And he's sloshing through the snow. And on the way there, he thought, you know, I'm just my dad. I'm just going to go into the Army and get this thing all over with. I'm never going to be a player. He said he opened up the mailbox, and on the way home, he read that letter. And he said that then turned him around, that he was going to make it in life.
Wow.
So sometimes just a pat on the back or a hug or tell somebody you love them or you believe in them. Many times we don't have, a lot of people don't have that happening to them. And final thing, for your listeners, if you're a coach, parent, teacher, just a friend, I think what made the big difference in my life, I never had a male image in my house. My so-called biological father abandoned my mother and I 3 days before I was born. She moved off a farm Came in, got on welfare, moved in a one-room apartment above a bar in a hardware store, became a maid for 50 cents an hour, and drew welfare $42.50 an hour. And I really had an inferiority complex. We had a clothes smell, the mothballs, you know, from bought them at rummage sales and et cetera. One day, the ex-coach put his arm around me, and things were, and he said, squeezed the back of my neck, and he says, Dale, I'm going to tell you something. Just remember this about life. God don't make any junk, man. You're special, and I love you. And he turned and walked down the hall. Even telling you that story, which happened almost 65 years ago now, that was the first man that ever told me he loved me.
Mm.
And so it's the simple things. It's there's an old saying, you know, yeah, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. Just reaching out to somebody can change their life. So Shaq and I, the little 13-year-old I've met, he hadn't changed much. He's still the innocent type of guy. When you look at him, he looks like the exterminator, but really he's Bambi inside.
Mm, well put. Hey, I want to ask you about the documentary Maravich on the SEC mm-hmm. Network, which debuted last week.
Right.
He at the end of his life, when he found the Lord, there was peace and there was happiness, but it's such a shame that he'd lived such a tortured life for so long.
Frank, that's really a profound story, and I'll try to make it as brief as possible. I inherited this job. Press Maravich got fired, so I inherited the job after he got fired. So I wrote a letter, and Pete got kicked out of school for some problems. I wrote letters to both of them and told them, I'm very sorry I had to inherit this job under these conditions. I'd never bother you at all. If I can help you in any way, because they were bitter at LSU. Well, years go by. And just, we run into each other by accident. And I had the team, and I said, Pete, why don't you do this? Come and talk to our team, would you? I said, we got a big ball game tomorrow. So I didn't tell him what to say. He got up, and he got up in front of the group, and he said, I see a couple of you guys in the front row. You'll probably be lottery picks, but none of you will ever break my record. I'm the leading scorer in the history of basketball. I thought, where's he headed with this? He said, I signed an NBA contract. He said, the highest played athlete, not basketball player, in the history of sports. He said, I had everything the world calls success. He said, I was an All-American so many times. He said, I was MVP. I led the league in scoring in the NBA. He had drove fancy sports cars. I lived in beautiful places. Every place I played, he said, from Atlanta to New Orleans to Boston. He said, I walked around with $3,000 to $4,000 of cash in my pocket. He said, but I was miserable. He said, I became an alcoholic. He said, I chased all the girls. He said, everything. I felt terrible about my life. He's telling the team this now, and boy, they're mesmerized. And he said, one night in my home in Louisiana, he said, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I wandered all over the house. He said, I tried to communicate with extraterrestrial people. He said, I made up my mind. Life isn't worth living. He said, I went in the bedroom and I opened up a drawer and I pulled out a pistol. He said, I put it up to the roof of my mouth. And I thought, wow, the pistol with a pistol in his mouth going to kill himself. He said, just before I pulled the trigger, he said, For some reason, I laid the pistol on the bed. I fell prone on the bed. He said, I don't even know if you're there. I don't even know if you're out of God. I don't know if I've spit at you. I've mocked you. I've made fun of you. He said, but if you are there some way, I'm frustrated, I'm disillusioned, I'm bewildered. Some way would you touch my life? He said, guys, I can't explain what happened. All of a sudden, he said, a peace took over my whole body. The sun didn't dance in the sky. The sea didn't part. But he said, guys, I was a miserable son of a bitch till I took Jesus Christ in my life. Don't let your possessions possess you. Well, time goes on. We're together one day, and we're talking about his life, and he said, Coach, how do you think I got so messed up? I said, Pete, I can't give you a profound answer, but I do know this. The first Webster dictionary ever printed was in 1806. Under the word success, in that dictionary, it describes success as fortunate, happy, kind, and prosperous. That's pretty beautiful. Fortunate, happy, kind, and prosperous. In 2000, or whatever the year it was then, and it's the same now in 2018, if you'll pick up the Webster Dictionary, under the word success, it'll describe it as attainment of wealth, fame, rank, and power. That's why we're screwed up. He really became a beautiful human being. And this wasn't some phony evangelist going around trying to con people. He was a beautiful man. And the rest is history. I became very close to his two sons and his wife, and now her new husband. And she's a remarkable lady, too. So Pete's story is one of disaster, one of love, one of hanging on, and giving your life to something bigger than you.
I want to get your take a little bit on the NCAA. You have been an outspoken critic of the NCAA. You call them hypocrites and the Gestapo. And there was that famous story you once told me about a player you had, Mark Alcorn, who's from my high school in St. Louis,
right,
who died of cancer, and who you wanted his teammates from LSU to come to St. Louis for the funeral, but you couldn't do it legally to pay for their flight. So
Correct. You
pick up the story.
The two most profound things in my life for being anti-NCAA, who legislates against human dignity and practices monumental hypocrisy. In 1981, we were in Alaska, the Alaskan shootout. I was taking bed check. I happened to walk into Mark's room just prior to the 10 minutes before the bed check to chat with a guy. And he was laying in bed, and his face looked just jaundiced. Are you okay? Oh, I got a lot of pain kind of in my side. I said, well, your skin's funny. You're not going to play. Oh, I'm going to play. No, you're not going to play, Mark. So we got home, had him checked, loaded with testicular cancer. So for 1 year, with very little hope of making it, they went to MD Anderson, knowing that death probably was hovering around the corner. He progressed and got worse. But he was trying to hold on. I got a call from his beautiful mama one day, Harold and Sheila Alcorn in St. Louis, and she told me that they don't think Mark's got much time left, and they're going to have a fundraiser in St. Louis, and Bob Costas is going to be there, and Hank Raymond's the assistant for Marquette. And she said, we asked Mark, if you had one wish before you leave this earth, what would it be? I'd like to see my three best friends on my team. And she said, Coach Brown, you know, I hate to ask you this, but, you know, we've mortgaged our home, and, you know, can you get the kids here? Absolutely. I said, they will be there. So the governor found out that, I don't know if I talked to him or somebody told him, I'm not sure of the circumstances, but he called me and said, listen, you can use a state plane free. He said, I can't go, but he said, man, he said, give my best to the Alcorn family. So, okay, well, being a critic of the NCAA, I knew they would like to have proved me to be one phony Elmer Gantry type of guy and nail me any way they could, because I wasn't going to shut up for the injustices. So I thought, well, I'll call the NCAA. So I called the NCAA, and I explained the situation. He's dying. His mother called me. They want to see his three best friends. I said, oh, nope, you can't. I'm page such and such. He called entertainment off campus. Hold on. Entertainment off campus. You can't transport an athlete more than 100 miles. Page such as, well, they'll be there. Are you turning yourself in? You figure it out. And I hung up. Now I thought, Dale, don't be so flamboyant here. I don't want to get the school in trouble. I don't want my cause to be heard trying to change this Gestapo organization. So I, on my own, I called and found out a red-eye flight out of Baton Rouge to get him to St. Louis in a cheap hotel nearby. To show you how long ago it was, and the prices are different, to fly up and get a hotel for that night would be $300 for each kid. So out of my pocket, I put $300 in three separate envelopes, pulled the blinds in my office, called all the kids in one at a time and told them, don't tell anybody this, but you call the airline. Here's the flight number. Here's the hotel number. You call. Here's the $300 to do it. I felt terrible. I felt like I did something wrong. I thought, that's stupid. So we get to Kansas City, and of course the three kids are in the audience, and I get up to speak, and I thought, I can't hold this any longer. So I asked the three kids to stand up, his three buddies. They stood up. I said, these are Mark's three best buddies up here. And I said, I brought them up here illegally. I paid their way to come. that shows you how stupid the NCAA is. Well, they didn't do anything about it. I think they would have been run out of town had they in. Final point. Years after that, in the 80s, middle 80s, 86, 87, around that time, I find a player in Bahia Blanca, Argentina, 6'11", Hernan Montenegro, could play every position on the court, had a wife with a two-year-old daughter, and they came, and he was destined to be a great NBA player, or an NBA player. So one day I get a call from the doctor's office, and the nurse says, here, Dr. So-and-so wants to talk to you. This doctor comes to the phone. He says, Coach, I've got Mrs. Montenegro here with her husband, and he said, she's pregnant, and the baby here, the cord's wrapped around its neck, and he said, I've got to get that baby out within a matter of hours. Or, he said, the baby could die, or the wife would lose her life. And he said, but the problem we have, they don't have any insurance. I said, Doc, what does it cost to do this? So he said, well, I'm not exactly sure, but he said, the number he gave me was $7,500. I said, Doc, just get it done. I'll figure out a way to do it. So again, I make an attempt to get this organization. The only thing they do well is what I said earlier. They practice monumental hypocrisy, and they legislate against human dignity. I call again. I explain the situation, and I say, so a friend of mine is president of a bank. Can I take them down and sign it? Co-sign and get this done? No, you can't. That would be illegal. I said, hold on. Did you not hear what I said? The mother could die or the child could die. Well, I'm sorry, you can't do that. That's an NCAA violation, page so-and-so. But I just hung up. So what I did, I had a friend that is not an agent for athletes. He represents famous entertainers, Wynton Marsalis being one. I called him. We've been longtime friends, and I said, would you do me a favor? I'm in a jam. Why don't you come down and sign him to a pro contract? And then we'll have to declare him ineligible. He flew to Baton Rouge, gave him $10,000. We had to declare him ineligible. He only played four games for us. So that's just the ice. Wow. That's the tip of the iceberg with the NCAA. I guess you can say I don't have much respect for him. Would you, Frank? Would that be accurate?
I think that sounds accurate. I just want you to know what kind of impact this interview is having. I'm getting texts like this. Frank, I'm at work, and my eyes are watering. Dale Brown is a wonderful human being. Thanks for the interview. Thanks, Frank. Wow. It's impossible to have a boring interview with Dale Brown. Phenomenal interview with Coach Brown. I'm sitting in my car outside of work waiting until this thing ends, even though that may make me late. Very, very moving.
Oh, wow. You know who'd be glad to hear that? I don't know how much time we got, but my mama. I never slept in a bed for 21 years. She had a little bed that pulled out from the wall. I had a little sofa I could touch her head for years. We didn't have a bath, a toilet, a shower. Finally, we were able to upgrade to that in that little apartment house. But I never, ever heard her ever complain or whine or mope. And I think what she did, she taught me something. She came home one night from babysitting, and she had me sit in her rocker, and she pulled up the little footstool, and she said, son, I want to tell you something. And this is profound. And those nice people that just gave you that message, I would say thank you from my mother, because here's what she taught me. She said, I'm embarrassed to tell you this, son, but she said, when these big shots come to pick me up to go babysit, she said, I'm so self-conscious. They're going to, you know, ask me what college did I go to, or what's your husband's employment? And she said, I don't want to tell them I'm in the eighth grade, and I don't want to say my husband left us. She said, so what I do, son, I go look up big words in the dictionary. And I study those big words. So as soon as I get in the car after they pick me up, I inject those big words, she said, to make an impression on them and keep them from asking me questions. And she said, son, don't do that, because you know what that's called, son? That's called making an image. And Dale, she said, if you do that, if you spend too much time polishing your image, you'll eventually tarnish your character and be an unhappy man.
Wow.
Now, the man that she married to never gave us any money, never wrote, never called, never had any contact with us. He vanished from the scene. But never did that woman ever run him down. So I know there's people that are listening that probably don't have a father, or you may be in a situation that you'd like to say something negative about a loved one. She's the difference. So I really thank those people, and that was the joy of coaching, being able to help young men.
Final thought on that. Even though when people think the name Dale Brown, they think Hall of Fame coach, two Final Fours, nearly 500 victories, I got a feeling that that's not how you want to be remembered as a basketball coach.
I wanted to do more than be a basketball coach. The reason, obviously, you have to have success, or they're going to run you out. And I knew that. And I could always go back to North Dakota being a high school coach. That wasn't the end of the world. But I wasn't going to sell my soul to a system. So the first house I ever went into, I didn't know how to recruit. I'm a high school coach and a junior high school coach, a no-name guy kind of. I remember the first place I thought, I know what everybody's going to tell them. We got these beautiful women on campus. You don't have to go to school. We'll do this for you. And I remember going in and sitting in the home and I'm telling the mother, there was no father present. And I said, Mrs. Cusimano, if you'll send your son Frank, trust me with him. I promise you this. I'm recruiting a human being first and a basketball player second. And I wanted to live by that because sports gave me father substitute. It gave me discipline. It taught me teamwork. It's the first time anybody, male, ever told me he loved me, the ex-coach. So I wanted to use it as that kind of a platform. Obviously, you got a winner, right? Bon voyage, they're going to get rid of you. So I hope basketball is, coaching is what I did. I hope it doesn't define who I am.
Coach, honored to have you on the program. Thanks so much. I'm glad to hear you're doing well. Really appreciate your time.
Frank, thank you. And I'll tell you what, your man, Brian Hoffman, you got to give him a raise. He is the most, he's not obnoxious at all in his perseverance, but he's a persevering son of a gun. He must have called me six times to get this interview because I was busy. So give him a good word to the boss, would you, Frank?
I will. Coach, great to hear your voice. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Frank. You did a good job. It was fun to be on your show.
All right. The great Dale Brown joining us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box. We'll be right back.